Comics number 155, Why So Serials, is on the air and in your ear. I'm the Grand Prince of Charisma, Mo, and I have three other guys with me I'm not going to bother to introduce because they've been talking shit about me before we go on the air far too much. But they can introduce themselves if they'd like.
Should we introduce ourselves with what insults we said about you off air?
Yeah, you can do that.
I'm Keith. Welcome to the show.
I'm Chris, a.k.a. Habib. And you know what? I'm just, the 11-year-old in me is so happy. Solo is finally getting a limited series. It's going to suck. The characters always sucked. But still, my toes curl in anticipation.
And Prowler's back.
Well, it truly is the 1990s.
What else from the 90s can we bring back? Okay, Doomsday's fighting Superman. There are clones. Peter and MJ will be married. Solo and Prowler have books. I'm literally drinking a Crystal Pepsi.
I think we need Night Watch from Spider-Man to come back as.
Maybe a little bit of Silver Sable. Sleepwalker is really not on the board at all.
Vigilante, that was 80s.
Vigilante was 80s.
Dark Star.
Oh, Dark Star's nice. One has been showing up for sale on the... They've been adding that one to Comixology, so there is a chance.
Now, when you say Dark Star, do you mean Dark Stars? The plural, the DC series, Ma?
Yep.
Okay. It's such a generic name, I had to check.
Damage coming back?
Oh, Damage.
Darkhawk? Anything?
Darkhawk, I mean, he's been around, but he hasn't had his own series, so yeah.
Yeah, they killed him, too, so.
Oh, please.
Like, that matters.
Since when does that matter, yeah?
Well, I'm sorry, but Superman is fighting Doomsday.
I love it. I really did find a Crystal Pepsi, though. Yes. Brett, you didn't introduce yourself.
That's right, because I'm Brett. Ha! What's our show about, Keith?
Well,
I threw you off with that one.
You did. I wasn't really paying attention. I try to ease into these episodes.
The Crystal Pepsi is already rotting your brain. That's the chemicals they put in the 90s.
Me down in it with its half cola, half Sprite flavor.
Actually, the question is, are those brand new Crystal Pepsis, or are they just, is that a crate that they found from the 90s that they put out now?
So what I love is that because, you know, we are in Canada, it has to be in both official languages. So it's not Crystal Pepsi here. It's Crystal Pepsi Cristal.
Which now, I had heard it wasn't coming out. Like, I had heard it was coming out, but not until August. Which makes me think that it's a good chance that actually it is. No, some leftover. Especially when you say what store you got it from, which was the crack Max.
For reasons unexplained, Canada is getting it earlier than the U.S.
Our pop sort of release dates, like comic release dates, they're not the same on the cover as in actuality.
That's right.
It's Wednesday.
It's dated for August, but it's actually out in July.
Yeah.
And it's a Marvel product, so they've already told the ending to the New York Post. I already know how this bottle of Crystal Pepsi ends.
Well, New York Post. They give it to The View first. But
does it end with Tab Clear putting it out of business?
Chris was asking me how long before Orbitz comes back if we've gotten Crystal Pepsi.
Oh, a Jolt. Where's Jolt? That's the one I want.
Oh, actually, yeah. Jolt was good, though. I'm pretty sure Jolt was legitimate. I drink every day.
You can get Jolt in the U.S. still, I'm pretty sure, but it's not regular Jolt. It's like double Jolt.
You can get regular Jolt as well in Canada. However, you have to mail order it. It costs $25.95
from the States, Chris? From the States? Because that doesn't count then.
Sorry? I'm just saying I could legitimately be enjoying a Jolt right now, but I'm too poor to import my soda.
You're not too poor. You're just the way you prioritize your dollars is not to put so-so beverages from the 90s as your top priority. And so-so, you know, maybe it's time to rethink that.
Orbitz was not so-so, it was awful.
Orbitz was brilliant. It was like a bubble tea without, you know, the flavor or texture of a bubble tea.
It was smaller little things that were like it. It was a really thick liquid. Like it was.
It was like oil suspended in water. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it wasn't good.
No, and it tasted like hair gel as well.
I would pay a premium today for a bottle.
And the part that pissed us off, they had these little things floating around in it that made it look like it was Orbitz, right? Almost. Yeah. But the part that pissed everybody off, I know, is that gel doesn't taste great, but maybe if the Orbitz, those little candies, actually had a flavor. They had no flavor to them.
They were probably just tapioca, the same as a bubble tea, right?
Maybe. Maybe.
That's probably all. I mean, bubble tea doesn't have, I mean, it's got a texture, but it doesn't have a flavor to those things.
No, but they feel cool going down. Orbitz,
okay. They were larger, though.
They were hard. Like, they were. I think you're forgetting how hard they were. They were not pleasant going down your throat.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah. And so you mentioned this. So I'm like, I made a joke to you, like, oh, you've had that. Maybe they also have some Pepsi Blue. And then I thought to myself, man, I would love a Pepsi Blue. I wonder how much it would cost. A bottle of Pepsi Blue on Amazon, $119 Canadian. Oh, that is not happening.
And how old is that bottle?
It's got to be from 2005 because it was started and discontinued in 2005.
That's awesome. Not only can you vastly overpay for it, but you can also probably get very sick from it.
You know, I am tempted right now to go out and buy a whole bunch of Crystal Pepsi and become a distributor in a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
Sell them on eBay.
Get like 1,000 10 years from now, you're a millionaire.
I imagine you could ship this into the US right now and make a mint if it's not out there for another month. And limited edition because, you know, it's not just Crystal Pepsi, it's Crystal Pepsi Cristal.
Yes, that's right.
I could probably trade one for the limited edition Ghostbusters Mountain Dew that's out down there.
And that's... ladies and gentlemen, we are OUT on our way to the max.
where's the air horn just to blast us out after 8 minutes? good show everybody.
And we called it Why So Cereal because we don't know.
Because we're talking about cereal next.
All right, previously on We Talk Comics.
Dum dum dum.
your heroes selected the topic for this week's episode. We talk a lot about jump on points and new reader friendly and what is and isn't a way into an ongoing story. But one topic we've never talked about in all of the episodes is movie serials from comic book. Movie serials, to be precise, because we like talking about comics here. So I selected three episodes from popular movie serials from the 1940s for all of us to take a look at and hopefully spark some conversation. If it doesn't spark conversation, we're back to talking about Crystal Pepsi. So I hope it works out.
I got a couple choice things to say about the new Star Wars serial, but... the actual breakfast cereal, not
not the movies,
not the movie cereal.
Well, you're 3 degrees away from comics if you talk about that. I'm sure there's going to be a Crystal Pepsi comic any day now. The second KFC, the second KFC comic book came out. So
and was great,
and it was awesome.
On a side note, what is the best tasting food item marketed from a comic book related? item that you can think of in history.
That's a tough one.
Really, there's not a lot to recommend any of the
TMNT pasta, TMNT craft dinner type
mac and cheese. I eat them on a regular basis despite knowing I really shouldn't. Hostess fruit pies.
Well, they were just kind of, they weren't.
That's a backwards one because yeah, of that's the a fact backwards.
That TMNT, remember, I mean, when we talked to Kevin Eastman, he even said people still ask him. When's it coming back?
I'll allow it. I ate a lot of Doritos over the summer because it had Batman and Superman on it.
Did you ever figure out that freaking contest?
You just enter and then you don't win. So it's like every other online
contest. It's like a contest. But...
You enter and then they send you a bunch of promotional emails and then you don't win. That's the way every online contest works.
You got us off topic. We were talking about movie serials.
Oh yeah, like
gotta be if you're gonna host, you gotta pull those reins in a little tighter.
I never agreed to that.
What?
I never agreed to either hosting or bringing the reins in. Those are two things outside my wheelhouse. So
I mean, I'll host then, and you just tell us why you chose these three cereals.
So I picked three cereals. One is a Captain America from 1944. One is
I think that was an Adventures of Grant Gardner.
and I chose the first Batman, 1943, which has a very, very different take on Batman as well. And I also chose The Adventures of Captain Marvel, which is by a lot of accounts the best. It's certainly the best, considered the best superhero serial, but there are many that consider it the best movie serial, period.
It pretty much that or Flash Gordon are pretty much the only conversation.
I'd just personally, because I've watched a bunch, I would throw Spy Smasher in the ring as well.
Okay.
But I just like Spy Smasher.
Well, let's. I did have a laugh because I chose these episodes at random. I literally went to a website and did had it generate a random number from 1 to 12 for each one of which episode I would put in the mix. So there was no consideration for it. Chris made an offhand joke as we ended last week's episode that please get one that's really racist.
Yes.
Mission accomplished.
And then the Batman one is called the Nipponese Trap. So
as soon as I saw that, I was like, we can't even talk about this. This is
it's a thing. It's not as racist as the Superman cartoon, I'll give it that.
And you know what, to be 100% honest, no matter what episode of that Batman you were gonna pick, it was gonna have a racist overtone.
Pretty much. It is a wartime serial. It does feature Robin and Alfred, which I was actually kind of surprised by the inclusion of them that early.
Yes, what a feature for Robin.
And Alfred was a little bit of a dick.
Yeah, I'd like to say that they all included damsels in distress and Robin as well.
That's pretty much what Robin's role is. Yeah. What I love about the Batman one is that it's low budget, so the costume's terrible. You can barely see out of that mask. And there's no Batmobile at all. Like, it's not even like they used the original sedan Batmobile. There's no Batmobile. Like, Batman routinely gets picked up by Alfred. like he's a kid leaving a costume party.
Well, 20 minutes later, too. It's like, at the end of that episode, Alfred comes, picks up Robin. And then it's like, where's Batman? Oh, actually, somewhere else. You gotta go pick him up now.
Actually, I'd like to defend the budget a little bit. Because, I mean, there's a car crash in this one that is actually one of the best car crashes I've seen in the era, where a truck just plows over a car.
You mean that stock footage?
Yeah, I know the one he means. Yeah, where he hits the cab. But I suspect that is reused from somewhere. Happened. I mean, it happened a lot in these serials.
Yeah, you probably watch the serial, even the whole Batman serial. You probably see that same crash 3-4 times. Yeah,
it is funny that because what happens in the story is Bruce Wayne in disguise is in jail, and then he hops in a cab.
And what a disguise it is!
What was his name? Dane White? Or
no, it was like Chucky or something like that. Chucky White.
Something Chuck White. Something. Yeah. Chuck White.
I feel like it was Chuck, but
yeah, I I was mentally replacing the name Matches Malone in there.
Yeah, I was too. I was like, this has to be Matches Malone. It's not Matches Malone. How could this not be Matches Malone? You mean Matches Malone isn't a reference to the 1943 serial? That's terrible. Why haven't they used this name?
Why so they... see, look, you had no problem picking this up at all.
So it was interesting because not all of them are Republic. So we do get a couple of different takes on the previously on, and then the cliffhanger, which one of them actually gives you scenes from the next episode, which wasn't a Republic thing.
Which means it was this one because this was Columbia and the other two were both.
Yeah.
Both
Republic. So this is the one that actually, like, next week you'll see this. Republic always just ends on a cliffhanger and there's the credit. So any other takes on the Batman specifically or general kind of comments?
I absolutely loved when they didn't guard Robin at all in front of the radio.
Matt, Robin was just so...
Let's stand around and unmask Batman while Robin makes a distress call to the police. They might as well said that sentence while he was doing it. That's it. It's such an incredibly weirdly paced thing.
It's undoubtedly... I thought of the three of them, it was undoubtedly the weakest. And a lot of that I blame for the fact that it is Columbia and it's not... And Columbia was... I mean, Republic was known as a Poverty Row. It was the nickname for the low-budget movie makers back then. It was Poverty Row filmmaker. But Columbia was known to have an even lower budget. And so they had an even lower budget, and they had that applied to this and to Superman, which they also did in the first Superman series. And like, you look at that costume for Batman, and there's, like, foam on the top of his mask. And then I used to have a dog. It was a Sheltie. And Shelties are supposed to, like, their ear is supposed to, like, bend halfway. But yeah. My Sheltie was screwed up where one ear went straight up and one bent halfway. And that's what the ears in this costume looked like. Like, you could never, ever get them standing up straight. They were tiny, these tiny little ears that looked more like horns. And the Batman costume looked awful. The Robin one didn't look nearly as bad. But one of the things that gets me about it, it didn't, like, action-wise. Like, the other two were, like, loaded. Like, you brought in that first scene, there's a fight, and there's tons of action. There's a lot of talking in the Batman one. Not so much action, and the fight scenes are short. And whereas the other ones are, like, really quickly paced, and you know, they managed to do as much as they could with them. This is just not any of those things.
Well, really, Batman and Robin was basically... And I found it to a certain degree with the Captain America, but the Batman and Robin one was the worst for lead characters get the shit kicked out of them on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously Captain Marvel is easily the most powerful of the characters,
sure,
right? Yes. But yeah, I mean, Batman, like, these guys, they couldn't even fight.
Oh, no. I mean, it's like the battles with the, like, the usual schlubs are taking them 4 minutes, you know, just to dispatch.
By the way, you can tell the schlubs in this and in any of these serials by the fedora. A guy wearing a fedora immediately means he's a $2 thug. That is what that means. That's the uniform, the standard $2 thug uniform is a fedora in a suit.
And you can tell that the evil one is either wearing a costume or Asian.
Yes. So, yes.
Typically a scorpion. Like, yes. Almost, I think every serial I've ever watched, the bad guy is like the scorpion.
Well, if you look in the credits on Captain Marvel, the scorpion is listed as the scorpion.
Yeah.
So that means he very well could be in.
It's supposed to be the scarab. I think they called him the scarab during the thing, and then he's the scorpion. Like, oh, it's
no, the scarab. The scarab was Captain America.
Oh, that scarab was Captain America. Okay. This series. Like, as much as we're insulting it, and I mean, it's not good. It's not even good for Once at a Time. It's, you know, it still was very successful. Like, it was a super successful. Like, the look of Alfred was based on this. Alfred was like a clumsy guy, kind of fat, yeah. Like a typical fat butler. And this, the guy who played him was a skinny guy. And this is what the Alfred we know like today actually looks like. is, and it's based on this guy. And also they, this guy, this, this serial is what introduced the Batcave. And also, especially going through the clock down in from the house, through the clock down into the Batcave. Oh, wow. Obviously, it didn't have like all the cool stuff in it, but it, so like it was important to the mythos. And then they brought it back as like a full leech or a full feature film in the late 50s, and they put it on campuses. Obviously, I've done a little research about what we watched here. They put it on campuses, and it would go to these different college campuses and sell out and sell out and sell out. And because of that, well, that's where the producer for the Batman and Robin 66 TV series actually saw him on one of these and saw the success. And that's when he decided to bring back the series. So that's it's what it led to, the, of course, the series, the TV series, which was decided to be a parody of these serials. So, I mean, like, it's important. Like, it's in comic book history, if we're talking about, like, from a comic book level, it's definitely important, but it's not good.
Well, I would make the argument
not good, Batman.
That this serial had nothing to do with a lot of that. The other serial is much better and less racist.
Well, the 1949 one.
The 1949. It is it is actually legitimately watchable.
Yeah, well, this is the one though that did lead to that stuff though. Yeah. This one was packaged in that, like the college campuses tour and those. And when it went to the theaters, it was actually packaged with that one as a together, edited together as two different, as not as one movie, but as, you know, two movies in one bill. So.
It was interesting as you talked about the lasting impact, because the design of the costume in this is very much what Chip Kidd used in Batman was it called Batman by Design?
Yeah, Batman by Design. That's right.
Yeah, like it's very much like the long thin ears, the nose piece that comes much further down.
Even when you look at the year one, like that is very much based on this design. As far as the look and the like, what's the name of the artist who did the year one? I can't pronounce it again. Mazzucchelli. Thank you. It's like Mazzucchelli looked at this serial and went, "That's it. That's what I'm gonna do. Just not shitty."
Yes. Well, thankfully, he doesn't have to draw shitty, misfitting cloth. That would be the worst Batman ever in the comic books. The guy who steps into a loose-fitting costume and is just like, "I'm the goddamn Batman right here." Give me a fucking drink, Robin.
Hey, they did make sure Robin's package was amply highlighted, though I did notice.
He got the bat extra pair of socks before he left the Batcave.
I wonder if they got the amount of groupies that Burt Ward said that he had had a mascot.
My favorite part of this, because Bruce Wayne has been undercover as Chuck White, is they unmask Batman and say Batman's really Chuck White.
Yeah, I know. That was my favorite part, because Bruce Wayne is nobody.
Because explain though the wonderful makeup job that was done to make him look like Chuck White and not like, didn't he just wipe a little like white cake makeup on his nose and go, "I'm a totally different guy now."
Like he peels a little bit of stage makeup or something off his nose when he leaves. Yeah. That's about it. Yeah, it's like he puts fake little end on his nose, and that's.
Yeah. Now the actor they had playing ridiculous. Him did that's... look a little bit like Lon Chaney Jr.
No, but that's ridiculous. That's like the idea of a guy changing his identity by just putting a pair of glasses on.
Yes, and a curl. In his hair, yes.
All right, well, let's talk a bit about Captain America. 1944, so also wartime. This was at the time the most expensive serial ever made. It is the only serial based on a Timely / Marvel property. And it only sort of has, it lacks a lot of Captain America elements that we are used to as, comic fans. For example, Steve Rogers. He's called what, Grant something?
Grant
Gardner.
Grant Gardner, who is a district attorney. Yes. He has no shield.
No, but he has a gun.
He has a motorcycle.
A gun and a motorcycle.
Yeah, his costume, he doesn't have the little wings on his head. He doesn't have his like the red boots. Not that the costume itself, not that there was actually any red in it. It was dark blue, white, and gray because that film like red, white, and blue in black and white. it's
black and white really sucks for having color in it.
you have pretty much have to explain periodically that he's dressed in red, white, and blue. Like, you have to have a character occasionally say, man, look at that recognizable red, white, and blue costume.
Well, I see these people cosplaying occasionally as this guy, and I'm like, no, you got it wrong. You're red, white, and blue. The costume actually is not red, white, and blue.
Are you actualing cosplayers? That's terrible.
I know. You know what? If I was ever to cosplay, it would be as this costume. I'd get it right.
I would do it just in black and white.
Yeah.
Just all, my entire costume in grayscale. I think it's odd seeing Captain America without the shield. Like it's like having a Superman that doesn't fly. Like I know at some point, like I know for like in the early days, Superman just jumped. But the idea of like Captain America with no shield. I mean, he did have the shield from the very beginning in the comic books. Maybe just couldn't make it work.
Yeah, I can only imagine how bad it would be if he started throwing the shield around and it just went nowhere.
But the shield back then was rarely thrown back then because it was that different shape too.
How long did he have the differently shaped one? It wasn't very long.
It wasn't very long, but I think it probably was still when this was going on. And this serial was 1944, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it was still during, the weird thing is this comes out, like you're talking about how, the Batman wants a wartime, serial. So, I mean, they have the Japanese threat. And this one, meanwhile, is a wartime serial where there's no Nazis, which is all that Captain America in the comics at the time was fighting.
Now, the bad guy was named Gruber. I'm just saying. Gruber's Nazis? Just...
Well, one of the bad guys, the one with the fedora, you mean, or?
You know what? I don't even know. I just read the credits that there was somebody named Gruber in there.
Yeah, this was, but as far as, again, like it jumps in right away. Like it shows you a little bit of what happened, and then Captain America's saving the girl, and there's an extended fight scene, and I thought that fight scene was awesome because a lot of it was one take. Like they had a few different takes, but they had like extended sequences of a lot of, ducking and moving and a very athletic stuff. And it was really kind of like, I thought it was really well done for the time. A very good fight scene this is a fight scene before we're going to see martial arts redefine what a fight scene would be. Right. So I think as far as being an exciting sequence at the time, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, like it's hard to imagine that before. I mean, because you watch Star Trek, and the fight scenes in that are a lot of, axe handles. Like there's a lot of axe handles, a lot of throws, and that's
there might be one judo throw. Yeah,
yeah. There might be just
the monkey judo flips throw. A lot too.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of kicks, like some sort of almost karate kick type thing, and yeah.
Yeah, the double, the flying kick that was common.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what fighting looked like on movies and TV until Bruce Lee came along, basically.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, just the, also Captain America, like with a gun is something that, that we're not used to as modern readers.
And again, there's a reason for all of this is that the Republic wanted to do the Superman, serial and they couldn't. And so they ended up doing taking the story they had done for Superman. They ended up switching it off to something called, to a character called Copperhead, which was a masked hero that they created. And then there was going to be a sequel to Copperhead. And they took the story from this sequel to Copperhead and they were going to make a serial based on a character called Mr. Scarlet, which was a DC character. The character was popular for like 8 weeks and then just died. Like, so they, but this character was a, his name was, I think it was Brian Butler, and he's a district attorney. And this is, and he has a gun, and he has a motorcycle, and so they took all this and the other elements from Comprehend, and they just kind of combined them all together when they got a chance to do this property. So the reason he's not Steve Rogers is because they already had a script where the guy was a district attorney, and Brian Butler, Grant Gardner, same thing. Like, this alliteration, we're good. Like,
it's odd watching these that. None of that, like, you see a little bit of the DNA, especially in the Batman stuff that's been used later, but yeah, Chuck White doesn't show up. There's 18 Captain Americas in the history of the publication of that character. None of them is this guy.
No, there's the Captain or the Marvel Comics wiki or not Marvel Comics, Marvel Comics website lists this Captain America, lists Grant Gardner as the tragic Captain America from Earth 600001666 or something like that, like this, you know. It's awesome. Like and yeah, the character is gone and not even, and the only thing that, like, you did see some shout outs to, like, the serial and kind of some of and stuff like that in First Avenger, like, you know, a little bit, but you know, but yeah, I mean, it's an oddity. It definitely is an oddity. But that said, it's not bad. Another thing that's interesting about this one is Dick Purcell, who played Captain America in this, passed away in pre-production. So he never actually, that's why there was no sequel. You know, it was actually fairly popular, but he passed away at the time. They didn't want to do a sequel. And by the time they did, Captain America and the whole wartime thing had fallen off and was no longer popular enough to do another.
And they didn't plug him into the life-giving machine?
No, they did not. But yeah, he passed away on a golf course. He was only 35 years old. So that's crazy when you're as old as us.
I don't even remember being 35, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I know.
It's a long time in the past now.
Anyways, I like this one.
Let's go ahead, Chris.
I was just going to say, what humane society signed on to these experiments? they go out of their way to mention the humane society is providing the dead dog to revive in this quack's experiment. I found that kind of funny. That gave me a giggle.
I think it's funny that the humane society is like, okay, so we'll sign off on this, but the dog we're giving you is already dead. I mean, there's a limit to what you can then do to it. That's outside of our purview.
But on the off chance that you can bring him back to life, as your character says, then we will not be unhappy.
I also like that the scientist basically, like, talked up his invention while he was having drinks and then got mad that people talked about it.
That's what all the scientists do. Like, in the 1940s, when you were having a mad science get together, it was always, you know, cocktails before, mad science afterwards. That's just pretty much it.
Oh, God, what was the club? The club they met in over drinks. Oh, it was like scientists hanging out at the country club. It was bizarre.
Scientists in movie serials did very well for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
They always have these big mansions and daughters, but no wives. attractive daughters, but no wife seems to be present. Butlers usually, like, they just do very well. Untested experimental scientists, especially. The ones that don't seem to have invented anything yet. All right, well, let's talk a bit about Captain Marvel, The Adventures of Captain Marvel. As I said, widely considered one, if not the best movie serial ever. It is the first serial made with a superhero after failed attempts to make a Superman serial. They would later make Superman serials, of course. And curiously, the beginning of the long protracted legal battle between National and Fawcett. They had fought, and it was this movie, because it came on the heels of a failed Superman serial. This is when they started suing them over Captain Marvel's a copy of Superman.
Well, even more directly, it's only because of the success of this that they were able to win that lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it established that that may be true.
Yeah. Yeah. So an interesting bit of chapter in history, as well as being what I guess then is the first superhero adapted to film, period.
First comic book adaptation in any form. Yeah, so it's historically significant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Because there are others that were comic strip or pulp that would have been preceded this, but this was the first comic book to screen. So, did you guys consider it the best serial ever made?
Well, certainly the best of the three we watched. Yes. Like I say, it's that of Flash Gordon. Like this is awesome. This is still awesome. It's shockingly violent, I feel, too. Mm-hmm. It's one of the things that really stands out for me.
I actually have to give it to Captain America over this, because I found the acting kind of atrocious, especially the love interest. She looked bored. She looked bored in every scene. She looked bored while she's radioing for help. Like, you could tell right before the shot, she actually said, "This is a one take thing. I'm doing this once."
I like the scene where she's being held by the scarab, and the Scorpion. Guys are holding Scorpion. Whatever. there was a scarab somewhere in one of these.
Yes, there? Captain America. This is the Scorpion.
I can't remember. Whatever. The point is that this is okay. It's the Scorpion. You're right. It was the Scorpion.
There's lots of guys with fedoras though, so don't worry about it.
Don't worry. I like the part where the guys are holding her in front of him, and there's a gun, loaded gun on the desk. She just picks it up and shoots at him, and she doesn't change facial expressions at all. Like she's just gonna kill a man right there. Just picks up and shoots at him, misses, and he just kind of looks at his robe like, "Oh, that was close." Like that was. That was a unique scene.
I'm glad you're a crappy shot, lady.
We need more villains that their go-to move is hiding behind a curtain. The Red Skull very rarely in the comics hides behind a curtain. I think we should bring this back more. It was strangely effective.
Yes, we're not going to look at the curtain with this bump behind it.
The costume was great. I'd like a Scorpion villain that looks like that.
Well, no,
and actually, the flying was great. Like the way they did the flying and that kind of thing, and some of the fights was excellent in this one.
The flying's done with a mannequin or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a mannequin on a wire, they show it to you very quickly, so you kind of buy it because it doesn't. It's not. I know the Supermans later would use an animation for that. Which they weren't ready for, as far as the where the technology and
the Superman serials used the animation and that was, and it didn't look good, and it was one of the reasons why everybody said Superman sucks. Captain Marvel is like is one of the things that hurt that serial, the quality of the flying wasn't good because they used the animation. Yeah, it was a mannequin. It was seven feet tall mannequin, and then they had a guy on wires that would jump in from the bottom of the sea, and a stuntman who jump in and just kind of land and everything like that. And it's even the 1978 Superman, when they were making that, their motto was, "We got to make our flying look as good or even better if we can, but just as good as the Captain Marvel one." And we talk about, again, a Poverty Row filmmaker republic still again, but they maximized what they had. And the flying effects look great then. They still look great. And it's in some ways, I love the flying in the 1978 Superman and 1980. I think that almost looks better than what they do today because it looks like I could see the person, So, but yeah, I mean, I like the idea that some 35 years later, they're trying to match that is fascinating.
My favorite moment was where he tossed some guy from above his head off a cliff, and it was great because there was that one moment where it just kind of whacked the side of the cliff and the obvious dummy just kind of shifts a little bit. And you're
like, I said it was shockingly violent,
absolutely.
So, when I hadn't seen it in a while,
Captain Marvel would not do that in the comic books today.
Holy moly, I accidentally threw that guy off of a dam. But that's bad news for him, I guess.
Again, Jerry Ordway was highly influenced by this serial. Mm,
yeah,
and you know that, and that, I mean, if you love what he did with the Power of Shazam, like I know I do, and I think sure you guys do if you've read it. Mm-hmm. you know, that's obvious, but I mean, I would love to have him on just to talk about that serial sometime, because I'm sure he'd have insights that we couldn't imagine. But like, the flying scenes are great. The costume. Like actual Captain Marvel himself looks amazing, and as does Billy Batson. Like it's just spot on perfect casting for both of them. The look is perfect, the costumes are perfect, like just awesome.
Now, the one shoulder cape thing, was that from the serial, or did that exist before? Does
that existed before? Yep, that existed before.
Because I thought that was a fantastic little detail that it isn't Superman's cape.
No. He looks, like they say, this guy looks like Captain Marvel looked then. I mean, we know of Captain Marvel as a beefy guy, but if you look at Captain Marvel and like his debut in Wiz Comics number 2, like he's actually very thin. And this guy was a bodybuilder. The guy who played him, Tom Tyler, I think it was his name or something like that. And he was a bodybuilder, but you put that costume on, it was kind of bulky and he looked kind of thin, but he wasn't. He was in shape. That's exactly what Captain Marvel looked like when he debuted.
It's interesting the choice to. I mean, Batson is older, obviously, than we've typically seen him.
And poorly cast.
No, but he's awesome. He looks so right.
He looked great to me. But the scene where he transforms into Captain Marvel it's a really cool, like, giant difference between them in height. You know, it's very much a dramatic. Yeah. It's not like they used the same actor and put him, like, you know, had him in flats or and then put him into lifts or something. Like, you know, they had the choice to make it two different actors and for them to physically be quite different. And really kind of go with that. Like, go with the idea of the comic. That he's not a disguise. It's not a disguise. He looks totally different.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this is great. It's great, you know. Easily the best of the three for me. And like I say, that, and I mean, I remember watching a Flash Gordon once and thinking that was amazing too. So maybe I'd have to watch them back to back, and it'll be a fight. Like, who wins in a fight, Captain Marvel or Flash Gordon? Probably.
I have the Flash Gordon on DVD.
Do you? Really? Awesome.
But I found that for me, I would watch the Captain Marvel and the Captain America ones for sure. Like they hooked me at the end. The Batman one didn't hook me quite as much. I mean, I love buildings blowing up as much as the next guy, but I did find that the quality just wasn't quite there.
They're cliffhangers. Their cliffhangers were more interesting for sure, Brett.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Republic did excellent cliffhangers. Like, it was one of the things that they were known for. Republic is considered the best maker of serials. They made. You might have come across this in your research, Mo. 60 odd, almost like under 70.
66.
Yeah. I mean, there were the Wikipedia page lists over 400 serials that were made between starting in the 1910s, which I had no idea they had started them that early. But then finishing off in the 1950s, basically TV killed off the serial.
Well, it's actually funny. Brett and I were talking earlier in the day about the upcoming show. And he mentioned to me, you know, we're talking about the show picture and what we're going to put up. He goes, we'll just put up the Republic logo. And I'm like, well, one of them is Columbia. And Brett said, I thought every serial was Republic. Hmm. And I'm like, no, there was Universal did them. And there was a company called Minor that I remember because they did this, the Tarzan one. And I've seen that.
Right.
And there was probably more than that. I'm sure there was, you know, at least a half dozen or seven, you know, maybe 6 to 8 companies that were doing serials. So, but Republic is the one you think of.
Yeah. Yeah, like I've had a desire now after watching these to, you know, maybe put myself on a bit of a schedule, like watching, like, you know, a new chapter of them every Sunday morning or something.
Well, I have the Captain Marvel DVD. Brett has Flash Gordon. We could have a viewing party, maybe the same time we watch Jaws 3D.
We'll watch one chapter each of those, and then Jaws 3D.
Yeah, so we'll just be it'll be, you know, 14 hours.
Yeah, that's the one thing that does slow me down on serials is the reminder that they're 12 or 14 episodes, which means they're 3 hours long to put them all together.
Longer, I think it's 200.
In some cases, yeah. Captain Marvel, I think, is longer, yeah. So, yeah, maybe I'll pace myself a bit more.
Well, there was talk about them putting out a four-hour edit of Captain Marvel at one point. It's not. Captain Marvel is 216 minutes. The four-hour edit includes all of the what's happening on the next episode and all of the what happened on the previous episode.
That we might not need.
Yeah. So it'd be like a Marvel Comics trade from the 1980s.
It'd be like you would be watching it and it'd be like, yes, I know, I just watched this 20 minutes later. I still know, I just watched this.
Previously on, I know, I was here.
One of the things that I think is really interesting is that I think everybody knows exactly what a serial like looks like, it feels like, it sounds like, and the pacing, like, and that the when we talk about the entrance and we talk about the cliffhanger, even if you haven't seen one, I think you know, like, you know, that it's kind of like a culturally the cultural impact of these things, and it's not just from films like Indiana Jones, but that thing, you know, obviously, and things like that, and their influence on filmmakers. I mean, that's all significant too. But either that, or it's because, you know, my first serial that I would have seen would have been on SCTV.
That's a classic right there.
That is a classic. I had sent something else for you guys to watch, which I felt guilty about. So I thought I'd make up for it by trying to send you something great. So I sent SCTV had a children's, like, they had near the end of their run, and this was like their last season when every cast member had left to go to make movies and greener pastures and everything, and they didn't have a lot left. They were inventive in how they filled the time, and a lot of it was this inappropriate children's show, and it was inappropriate because it took place in a bar and the host was plastered the whole time, Happy Marsden, and then you would have in the background Mike the bartender. He was like this unfriendly bartender type, and he would spend the whole time watching, like, you know, those aerobic workout videos of women and stuff like that before he switched the channel to
20-minute workout.
Yeah, those things. Like, and then they would switch to this, and it was a Republic film, Six Gun Justice, and it was the cheapy, like, it was a cowboy one, but it was like that cheapy feel of the Republic, like when they were really a poverty row, like when they were near their end. And this, it's so, like, the parody is so pitch perfect, and I mean, they're so funny, and it's like even near the end, SCTV just like one of the greatest shows ever. And what do you guys think of Six Gun Justice? You guys have any memories of that? Or
I don't remember that season as much as I do some of the earlier stuff. I mean, that because I've for those, I mean, there our listeners will know some of the actors who were in it. I mean, Andrew Martin, Eugene Levy, and Martin Short.
Joe Flaherty is also
Flaherty, yeah. Yeah, Flaherty was the bad guy.
Yeah, he was the bad guy, yeah. Yeah, I don't know the name of the actor who played Happy Marsden from Happy Hour.
one of the Second City folk who did not make it to Saturday Night Live.
Or
to any of the Bill Murray movies.
Or to stardom.
Yeah, but who cares about any of them? That puppet was great. Maniac Mansion, though, wasn't he? Wasn't he like the fly or something like that? That was.
I imagine he's been. Yeah, I mean, any of those folks, you know, continue to be working actors for, you know, had careers ongoing. They weren't necessarily Ghostbusters, but they had careers for sure. I mean, I remember like the Monster Chiller Horror Theater and that kind of thing.
Yes,
so great.
But it was great taking a look at that Six Gun Justice, because it is, having watched the other serials so close, there was such love in it. Like it was certainly intentionally cheesy and intentionally, you know, goofy, but there was a lot of respect for the form. Like they really picked out the kind of subtleties of the way those were structured and the way the mustache twirling bad guys were. That was quite nice, quite enjoyable.
Actually, this brings up a point I was thinking about while watching these. Do cereals work when you trade weight them, when you put them all back to back? Because the cliffhangers were never really meant to be seen in conjunction with others. Yeah. Is it like a comic book, or are these best viewed one at a time? Take a week off, see another episode. Because I did cheat a little bit on the Bat one. I just wanted to see how the linkage was. It wasn't good.
Yeah, and that happens frequently, yeah.
That said, though, you did pick the Batman one, which was the worst of the...
Yeah, it was the first one on the list.
But that's certainly true. I mean, the Captain Marvel ends with a bomb landing on the building. It was, as Chris was saying, like you weren't going to see these back to back, so it was okay to rewind 30 seconds and show them escaping before the bomb hits, and kind of cheat it that way.
And if you watch Six Gun Justice, the way that they do that, it completely parodies that quite lovingly too, and you know, yeah, brilliantly. And by the way, I just want to mention, if you're an iTunes subscriber, that type of thing, if you go to the website, you can always look up SCTV Happy Hour yourself. But we have links on last week's show and this week's show to the particular episodes we watched here and to the SCTV and anything else we talk about. So I just want to mention that's there to help you find it. If you come to the site, visit us and leave a comment on what you think of the show, or you know what you think of Habib. Do you want him back?
So are we going to watch Jungle Menace for next week? Is that
I have no idea what that cereal? Is, but I want to see it so bad.
The first one ever?
Yeah, the first two listed from 1937 are Jungle Menace and The Mysterious Pilot. And the best
one from 1910 Keith was talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on what you count as a serial, because I know there are things that we would consider more like a soap opera that did exist prior to that.
Yeah. The official, like, serials, like, from major studios, I guess. Well, this is Columbia.
Maybe it's the cliffhanger thing, that the action cliffhanger is probably what was...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, because, like, The Silent Flyer came out in 1926. But the Jungle Menace from Columbia had Frank Buck in it.
Oh yeah, I saw that one on a list I was going through, and Brett of course knows Frank Buck from Bring 'Em Back Alive.
Yeah, exactly.
A failed 1980s TV show that I had no idea was a licensed character.
Yeah, which I actually rewatched again about 5 years ago, and it's a pretty good show actually.
It has that 80s
feel to it, of course, but
it was one of two shows that was created to kind of try to capitalize on the Indiana Jones thing. So Bring Him Back Alive.
And what was the other one?
Tales of the Gold Monkey featuring Bruce Boxleitner.
Oh, that's... So
Stephen
Collins was Tales of the Gold Monkey.
Oh, okay. Was Boxleitner then...
Boxleitner was Bring Him Back Alive.
All right. Because well, then I definitely want to see that again.
Tales of the Gold Monkey, I watched that as well. And that is... It's not nearly as good.
Does not hold up as well. Yeah, no. that was what I found too.
He must be quite an old guy then. By the time that was he playing like a mentor type character?
Who?
What's his name? Frank Dukes or whatever you said his name was. I can't remember.
No, Frank Buck was the lead character.
He's okay. No. Bruce Boxleitner was playing Frank Buck.
Yes.
Okay. Frank Buck is an interesting person. Like he's got like stuff going on. But
Frank Dukes, by the way, that was the lead character in Bloodsport. So I
and a real ass badass dude.
No. Claims to be a real ass badass who's a liar.
Oh, he's
who's a liar.
I love his interviews, man.
Yeah.
Well, now, okay. True. Now this, my list is getting long. Now I gotta look for Frank Dukes.
This happens every time. You know, we're always like, oh, well, this will be good. We're doing a serial, so we won't like. We always add comics to our list of what we have to buy, so we won't have that problem now. So
now I'm off to YouTube, so I can see interviews with both Frank Buck and Frank Dukes.
Frank Dukes' work on Only the Strong is excellent. Lots of breakdancing and fighting. One of my favorite martial arts genres. Only the Strong.
That is not a genre. That's one movie.
That's like saying Jim Cotta is a genre.
only the greatest movie ever.
Hey, hello. There are four movies with gymnasts doing martial arts. I call that a genre.
What only one of them was the gym part, actually part of the, like, was the actual martial arts. The fact that you were, like, the other ones that would say they actually were karate guys. They just...
No. Spitfire.
Oh, you're right. Actually, Spitfire. Yeah. Oh, I should. All right. So speaking of things that we shouldn't watch, I sent you guys a video, and I said, I want you to watch it. I don't know if we're going to talk about it on the air, I said, or not. I just need your opinion, because this is this something that I didn't want to watch. And I kept on hearing people saying, oh, you got to watch this. You got to watch this. You got to watch this. It's called The Final Deletion. And it's like, I watch it and I'm like, a few people don't like it, but almost universal praise. And I just don't get it. And I just don't get it. And so why rats?
Well, because Brett had asked me what I was going to say about the show, and I was about, like, having watched The Final Deletion, and I was going to demand to know what you saw in it that was worth us looking at.
Well, it's the opposite. I was hoping you guys could tell me. Like, I thought maybe I'm the wrong guy, because it's a couple of wrestlers who put together this, like, mini movie. And so I thought maybe, and so there's some wrestling sort of in it, but there's a lot of references to horror movies and sci-fi, and just a very comic book feel, because of a B movie feel and all this stuff. Like, it's insane. So I'm like trying to figure out, like, why everybody loves it so much. And
perfect.
It's that time.
That's bullshit. That's bullshit. Well, then you guys can tell me off air. I don't care if it's on air. Tell me sure. I was like trying to. I need somebody. I'm like, maybe I'm the wrong guy, because I'm a wrestling guy. Like, maybe somebody who some other people.
that's
it's trying to appeal to somebody else.
On my 100% honest reaction was, maybe I'm the wrong person because I'm not a wrestling guy.
My 100% honest reaction was, well, this makes me appreciate Kevin Smith a whole lot more. And yes, I want my 17 minutes back.
Yeah, I made it about 2 minutes before I went, I'm not watching this crap.
Smart man.
Too bad, though. You should have made it a little farther, because there is the one thing where there's the Roman candle fireworks, and he's shooting it at the guy, and he's the guy's protecting himself with a garbage can lid.
I did watch that. Yeah, that was good.
That's crazy. And then they pulled back in this, like, the angle from the drone, and it's night, and it's just lit up, and it's like the greatest visual ever. Like, it's really cool. But you know,
your YouTube sharing privileges may be going on probation. So
I don't think so, because I sent SCTV. Suck it.
So, Chris, tell us what you have coming up.
All right, next week's episode. I am so excited about this. This one we're calling Why So Cereal?
Cereals.
No, cereal. Single. Because we're talking about serial killers. Your homework for next week is to read Nailbiter. It is on the Hoopla app. For those of you who need a free copy, the first three volumes are up there. And bring your favorite comic book serial killers to talk about. Does Joker count? Are there legitimate terrifying serial killers in comic books? Mo, this is your chance to talk about the Green Mile. Or not Green Mile, Green Wick.
Darren, I thought we were switching to a Stephen King podcast all of a sudden.
I'm sitting here thinking, can't Keith or Brett pick the topic again? Like,
I thought it was a good topic. And I'm giving you an excellent read.
I'll be the judge of that.
Who did Nail Butter?
You know what? I don't know off the top of
Williamson,
my
head. Williamson Henderson. Yep, Joshua Williamson.
All
right, so I will read Nailbiter, but as far as favorite serial killers, like, that's like
in comic books or just overall?
In comic books. Now, if you have a favorite Jason or favorite Michael Myers type serial killer in or version of the comic book. Is there a good serial killer movie adaptation of a comic book? I couldn't come up with one.
How pedantic do we got to be about it? Because Jason and Michael Myers are technically spree killers.
That's true.
Damn it. And I'm going to be really, I'm going to be really, really specific on this. We're doing this. All right. So look, serial killers next week. And I'm sure if I work a little bit harder, I can probably find some cool Batman character that's a serial killer that I liked. But probably in line with like a Legends of the Dark Knight or something. But that's then. And then 2 weeks from now, we want to mention that Joe Eisma is going to come on. Am I pronouncing the name right, Brent?
Sure.
We hope. We'll find out in a couple of weeks. From Morning Glory, is the artist who heard about the podcast we did last week where we were talking about the excellent book he and Nick Spencer do, and he wants to respond to some of the things we said, and so we're looking forward to a good conversation with him. And 3 weeks from now, well, you'll find out 2 weeks from now what we're doing 3 weeks from now. OUT.